With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. A rather sad day for English cricket. Fortress Edgbaston has been breached by the Australians by a brilliant last day performance. I'm sure you've already heard all about it. 146 all out is all England could muster in 52 overs, as both Nathan Lyon and Pat Cummins shared the wicket. 6 for 49 for Nathan Lyon, who quite often actually doesn't perform so well on the last day of test matches, and 4 for 32 for Pat Cummins, who exploited the uneven bounce in the Edgbaston fifth day pitch. Top score was Chris Wokes with a determined 37. A couple of batsmen early on got in, Jason Roy 28 and Joe Root 28, but they just couldn't deal with that vicious spin and bounce and uneven seam movement as well from Cummins. So one up to Australia. And we're going to look back at that defeat with two men who have interesting different perspectives on it. Firstly, Trent Woodhill, the Australian batting coach who's known Steve Smith since he was very young. And also later we're going to talk to Liam Plunkett about what he's been doing in the aftermath of the World Cup and maybe how he would get Steve Smith out. So, of course, the big focus on the next week or so will be who will play for England in the second test, with Anderson obviously ruled out, Jofra Archer bound to come back in, but who will be the spinner? Because Moeen Ali had a disappointing match with bat and ball, and actually if you look at Smith's record, his stats against fast bowling averages about 64, his average against off spin 90, but his average against left arm spin only 34, and both Ravi Jadeja and also Rangana Harath, the Sri Lankan, have got him out a few times and troubled him. So that is going to be a big focus for England over the next week. How do you get Steve Smith out? Because after all, if you look at the result of this match, the Australians won by 252 runs and Smith scored 286 in the game. So he clearly was the difference between the teams. And if you go back to the first innings of the match, when Australia were 122 for 8, it was Smith who was still in, who managed to convert about 40 not out at the time to 144, and that gave Australia a first innings total of 284, which should really have been about 180. So they got 100 too many in the first innings, and then obviously Smith rubbed it all in the second innings with that excellent, sublime 142, and really put the game out of reach of England. And I think it was only a matter of time today before the Australians polished the English batsmen off. So, as I say, it's interesting to talk to a man who's known Steve Smith since he was very young. Trent Woodhill is a specialist batting coach, particularly working with a lot of white ball franchises in both the IPL and, of course, the Big Bash. And he's over here at the moment keeping a close eye on this series. And he knew Steve Smith as a teenager. And I asked him what he first saw that he really liked.
I saw him as a 15-year-old and he was precocious, talented. And he was still forming as a man and also as a cricketer. And what I instantly liked about him was that he was unusual. It wasn't the production line young player that I'd seen come through Australian cricket, where they all tended to look the same, have the same body shape, have the same skill set. So my curiosity around Stephen meant that I got to know him pretty well and also understand his mechanics, and I became protective of it because I thought he was someone that was really, really good, and to me didn't have any mechanical weaknesses, even though nobody seemed to understand how he did it. And that was probably more around my sort of frustration with the Australian game, that you know, there wasn't too many different things. So in my work with Stephen, over a long period of time, it's only ever been about making sure he was doing the things that he did naturally. If I take someone like David Warner, I've done more mechanically around structural change with him, whereas Stephen was all about protecting what he already had. And that was well followed up by Michael Divinuccio at a much later date, you know, in that Australian side, where, you know, Diva and Stephen became a really good force together, and that's where he went from, you know, a player with talent to an absolute superstar. And it's, you know, you look at Rory Burns, you look at Stephen Smith, both players do things a lot differently to what, if you like, the old guard, and not so much as in age, but the old guard of thinking sees a player. And we get confused by that. And you know, it happens in other sports, and it just progresses and goes along a lot quicker in sports like golf and tennis. If I think of Jim Furyk or I think of Jim Courier, two players who had different styles, and it was about winning more so than it was about how they look, so they could get away with it. Whereas in cricket, it's easy to pull somebody apart, even when they are winning or when they are doing well.
What were the mechanics of Smith that you particularly liked, and what are the things that actually do work for him?
Well, fourth stump to Stephen has always been middle stump to everybody else. So in the early days when he was a sort of 19, 20-year-old, he was, if I threw him a ball, if he faced a ball and it was going to hit a fourth stump in the imaginary sense, that was an onside shot for him. Likewise, the fifth stump was a straight drive, and then sixth stump, he was able to collapse his back leg, get his hands through the ball at a much later phase than a conventional, if you like, top hand dominant player. And I just liked that because it just made sense, because inevitably there was a 6-3 field. So anyone bowling in the channel to Stephen, especially full, it just got hit through the onside. And that was, to me, that was the starting point of where he was at. And then he's developed those things, you know, with the back and the cross, where he found he was in a position to deal with a hip height ball or you know, the top of off stump ball as well. So I think that it's a pretty simple thing, but it's similar to Kane Williamson, it's similar to Virat Kohli. How they arrive at that point's different, but it's a similar thinking. And then I go back to the greats as well, of people like Viv Richards. They did that really easily as well, and it was. The things that happened before he struck the ball that people were concerned about, and then the areas he was hitting the ball that people were concerned about, rather than the fact that 99% of the time when he made contact, it was in the middle of the bat, so it didn't matter where, you know, which side of the field it was hit at, it was always going through a gap and going to the boundary.
It's interesting to kind of surmise where these particular idiosyncrasies came from. I once went to Viv Richards' old playground in Antigua and talked to him about that's where he learned to play, and they bowled from one end, and there was when they bowled outside off stump, he hit the ball over mid off or over long off.
Yeah.
And over long off there was a fisherman's house and garden, and the fisherman never threw the ball back. He was a grumpy old sod. So if Viv hit the ball over long off from the sort of off-stump line, he was six and out, because the rules of their local game was if you hit the ball out of the park and it didn't come back, you're out. There was a building over long on past the back of the playground, and if you hit the ball over long on, it bounced off the building and came back into the playground. So he worked out that he could hit a six and still be in if he hit the ball from outside off-stump over long on. I wonder if Smith had anything like that. So everybody's a product of their environment.
Yeah, exactly. And Stephen worked really closely with his dad, Peter, for a long period of time, up until the age of 16, and continues on. So there would have been things that Peter and Stephen did together that would have led him to where he's at. I think also, I have some theories as well around where your dominance lies, and Australian cricket speaks a lot of top hand dominant. You know that you have to have a strong top hand to be able to control the bat. But I've seen since the inception of the IPL that most of the young Indian players coming through have strong bottom hands. And in Stephen's case, he with that strong bottom hand grip, he's got enormous control through the right side of his body. So it makes sense for him to make contact with the ball later. Whereas somebody like an Aaron Finch is exceptional with his top hand being his dominant hand being a left hand, and he can hit the ball out in front with a lot more success than certain other players. So it's where that optimal contact point is when under pressure that you can repeat. Is to me is the first starting point I would look at with batsmen, and that was with Stephen seemed natural, even though perhaps it didn't look natural to others.
So is it about playing the ball late? Is that why he keeps making contact with an off stump ball and still managing to hit it through the leg side?
Yeah, and it's because that works for him, and there's others someone like a Matthew Wade, that was a very interesting innings as well. If you look at him, he's a contact hitter, so. He's pretty balanced, and his technique seems to the eye look pretty normal. But because he's a contact hitter, he needs to actually hit more balls. So him letting balls go sometimes can be more dangerous than him playing at balls, say a second new ball, because he gets into a rhythm around contact. And Stephen's the same. His patterns are that every ball is new and fresh. So it's not that he feels comfortable when he's batting. It's just that it's not comfortable or uncomfortable. It's about, right, how can I find the middle of the bat to this ball? And when you think of it that simply, it just makes a lot of sense. So your footwork or your style or your grip shouldn't get in the way of that. But we feel like we have to set somebody up a certain way so they can handle pressure, or they can handle a moving ball or a spinning ball or an up and down ball. And inevitably under pressure, that's when that falls apart. I mean, Stephen's always had that technique. So to me, I was asked the other day, I don't feel like he looks any different than when he was 16 and made his first grade club debut in Sydney. He looks the same player, which I think is a really healthy way. It's amazing that when somebody comes along who's different, people keep making the same mistakes. If you're familiar with baseball, Mike Trout's the greatest baseballer of all time at the moment. In seven seasons, he's wins above replacement records, phenomenal. And he came into baseball when everybody who was a power hitter would look to hit the balls that were up and over the plate. And that was where pitchers were trained not to pitch. You're trained to cut the shins of batsmen and over the edges of the plate. But this Mike Trout who came along, he destroyed that pitching. So there was a whole lot of pitchers that continued to pitch low to him because that's what they'd been told to do, because that's what they were told success would lie. And Trout just keeps hitting it over the fence. So they had to change their thinking, but it's ingrained. And I guess mechanically, if you're ingrained to do something a certain way, and same as the batsman, it's difficult to change your thinking because we're so tied down by it.
Well, I mean, physically also, bowlers are conditioned to bowl a certain way, and they've had success doing that for years and years. And to actually change that quite fundamentally is quite tough. If you were a bowler now, bowling at Smith, how do you get him out?
I have a really bad track record when I'm in coaching teams against David Warner and Steve Smith. And I'm always asked in team meetings, right, how do we get these two out? And I don't know. I spend most of my time trying to make sure that they don't have any perceived weaknesses that through helping them, not through instructing them. And it's a difficult one. I mean, I said about Coley, I thought last year England bowled, they didn't starve him enough of a tempo, and Coley, like Smith, is a tempo player where they want to create the rhythm of the match. And during that first innings, I felt that because there was so much happening at the other end, it was easy to try and attack Stephen through a certain way rather than starve him of strike and starve him of tempo. And that was the best way. Rather than thinking to the technique, right, where's there a weakness in his technique? And that's where analytics is really dangerous, because we can look at the areas we think, right, I think this guy's got a problem. He collapses his back leg to hit drives inside out. So maybe we can come through the gap. But that's actually is probably too whimsical. And so I think the plans to these top players, like like those two, you know, Coley and Williamson, and so it's actually changing the tempo of the game, so it's not played at a tempo that suits them.
And I suppose in a way, what you're almost saying is that forget about the sort of physical nature of getting him out, try some mental tricks, which is keep him off strike, starve him of strike. There's a slight irony there in that you're trying to get a bloke out by keeping him at the non-striker's end, but in a way that could make them tense up and then try and do things they shouldn't do because they're out of their rhythm.
Yeah, it's a dangerous game, and I'll happily say that I don't know. My answer to everyone has been I don't know how to get Stephen out. I just think his appetite now for batting is only increased upon the suspension finishing, and it was so high beforehand, and now it's just through the roof. I think, you know, the difference between the really good players and the incredible players is just that hunger.
Well, some fascinating thoughts there from Trent Woodhill, and he certainly suggests that all the plans to Smith may be all misguided. Certainly England, they tried pretty much everything. They tried hanging the ball outside off stump early on with Smith's excessive jump across to the offside, thinking that it might dry up his runs on the leg side and eventually make him chase one. Well, he did chase one in the end, but he got 142 before he did so against Chris Wokes in the second innings. Another theory was bowl straight with more protection on the leg side and a leg slip. Both Stuart Broad and Chris Wokes tried that ploy, and there's a couple of narrow escapes where the ball from Smith sort of flicked away on the leg side, went in the air wide of that leg gully fielder, but it's a bit of a lottery, and of course it does play to his strengths because he gets a lot of runs on the leg side. They tried the bouncers as well. Stokes actually did hit him on the head once when he was almost through the shot, but that obviously didn't pay off. And then also Moeen Ali just couldn't tie him up at all. They had nobody really apart from Joe Denley to spin the ball away from him, and actually Denley posed him one or two problems, which just wasn't really accurate enough. So England have to try, I think, to think about moving the ball away more consistently against Smith. And for that reason, I suppose Anderson was much missed because he was the one guy that could probably genuinely swing the ball away against Smith. So they need to find someone like that who can do that kind of thing. And also, Jofra Archer coming back in to play his first ever test match, I think he will pose different problems getting the ball up from not far short of a length with that extra pace. He might also try a full ball sort of at leg stump. And it was that sort of area that Liam Plunkett talked about. Many of England's World Cup stars, of course, have been in action in the Ashes, but several haven't been quite so lucky. Owen Morgan is doing the business now for Middlesex, and Mark Wood, of course, is injured. And Plunkett has been playing a little bit for Surrey in the Vitality Blast, but now he's injured as well, got hit on the thumb by a beamer against Glamorgan, so he hasn't been able to play any cricket at the moment. And it was interesting to talk to him about perhaps how he would bowl at Steve Smith, but also first, what it's been like post the World Cup and that sort of inevitably flat, anticlimactic sort of feeling.
After 2.5 weeks on, I feel like I'm back to level, really, after the highs of the World Cup. And then I had a few days where you're a little bit of a dip, because you go from being with these guys, it is like a band of brothers. You're with them day in, day out, in such a huge occasion. And winning that World Cup is something that you might not do again. It's never been done, and the way it was won, that last over, it's sort of something special. So that was such a high, and then going from that a couple of days later, you sat by yourself in the flat. I'm not like saying, oh, I feel sorry for anything, but it's just the balance of high and low. And then I played my first T20 game with Surrey, and I struggled a little bit, actually. Not that I wasn't up for it, I was probably exhausted a little bit. And then the second one, I felt really good. I was back to normal. The second game, we beat Glamorgan here, bowled them out for 50, and I felt in a good place.
So do you think, focusing on those sort of lower points, do you think that was partly exhaustion and partly the sort of exhilaration and kind of, because it was such a high, inevitably there's going to be a low afterwards?
Yeah, I think it was. I think when you're in that World Cup bubble or your international cricket, even when you play a series, you finish a series and you're exhausted, you find yourself falling asleep in the afternoons and stuff. It's just because you're on and you want to perform, and you know everyone's watching you, and you're playing for England. So I think it was after that World Cup, it was just the moment you sit down and you're exhausted. You're just thinking about the highs and lows of the whole World Cup, about getting beat, about not being picked, about doing well. It's such a up and down the whole way through. And yeah, it is a drop-off, but it's how quick can you level yourself out. I struggled, to be honest with you, for 3 or 4 days.
And how did you come out of that then? Did someone help you, or did you help yourself?
I spoke to Andrea, the sports psychologist here. We did like a bit of a debrief, which helped me. Got to write some stuff down. Did some bit of a chat with her for about 45 minutes, and I felt that was really useful. Writing stuff down, like, what did I enjoy about the World Cup? How can I improve? What was the best thing about it? What was the worst thing about it? Technically, tactically, mentally, I wrote everything down. So it was quite nice to get that off my chest. And I didn't do that straight away. I didn't do that in like a half an hour space. I would answer something and maybe come back later in the day or the day after, because I didn't want to just write stuff for the sake of it. So I actually thought about it for a few days and I took my time filling it in, and then we spoke about it.
Have you looked back at the final? Have you watched the video?
Yeah, I've watched like the highlights package, like the one where it's condensed into about an hour. I've also watched the clip, which is 8 minutes long on, I think it's one of the apps, like over and over again a few times to get that. But I think we want to try and get together as a team. I think speaking to Morgs, we might try and get together and just have a dinner and watch some of it back, because we won the final, seen the guys, did the thing the day after down the street, came here, and then all of a sudden you're gone. It's the Ashes, you go back to county cricket, and something was a huge thing. Probably the biggest game of your life. Just the way it unfolded, you disappear and you don't see them guys. Are you going to be back in that squad? Are you going to be with the same group of players going forward? You know what I mean? You just don't know if you're going to be with that group of people again.
Is there a sort of feeling of slight envy that you can see 6 or 7 of those players from the final now immersed in an Ashes series, and they've got another kind of challenge, whereas for you, it's almost, what do I do next?
Yeah, it is. And I think as soon as it finished, I had to get my head around coming back and playing county cricket. And county cricket's tough. You can't come in half-cooked, really. You can't come in and not give it your all. And that sort of thing, I didn't want to come in, because you'll get punished. Some serious players, some international players, some good county cricketers. I didn't want to turn up half-prepared or mentally half-prepared. And the first game, I wanted to come back and perform, but I felt like in a daze the whole game, and I bowled 2 overs for 20. And that could have happened on any given day. But I just didn't feel good at all. And as I said, the second time, I did feel a lot better. But it's trying to get myself into something. I've signed up. I'm going to do a strength and conditioning course over the next 6 months. It's something I've always enjoyed doing. I might see myself down the line doing that.
You're going to get even fitter. You're fit enough as it is, surely.
It's just I would like to get involved, because I feel like I know what I've been through over the last year since I've played international level, county level. I've worked with a lot of S&Cs, and I feel with my experience of being a cricketer and doing your cricket coaching badges, which I want to do this year as well, and then your S&C is the next few years, what can I add to my sort of artillery in terms of cricket-wise, and what can I give to other people? Sometimes I would just bowl on a good length. I would put stumps with no middle stump in it and try and bowl through there, and I'd play cricket golf. So I'd have 18 balls where if I hit the stumps on the length, you get a par. If you go through and you hit the actual stumps, if you go through the two in the middle, hit the stumps, you get a birdie. And if you miss it, it's a bogey, so I'll try and do that.
What's an eagle then?
An eagle, actually, if you go through and hit top of off stump.
Oh, right. Okay.
So that's what it'd be. And double bogey if you completely miss everything, I guess. But it's just something. I know sometimes when you're youngster and you come to a net and you bowl through and you just bowl through, oh, that feels all right. And where's it actually going?
So there's no focus, whereas yours, there is.
Yeah, and it just switches me on straight away. And my first ball is I'm trying to hit that.
Just looking at this test match, Rory Burns, you played Rory Burns for a couple of years or a year or two, and you obviously played against him. And then you've seen Steve Smith make all those runs. How is it as a bowler, bowling at those kind of guys that are sort of not orthodox?
I think it's hard. I remember Yardie used to do it. He used to be stood right across. Can you still focus on where you want to bowl?
It's disconcerting as a bowler a bit, isn't it?
Because you
suddenly think, where are they, kind of thing.
Obviously, Steve Smith he goes right across, and you think, it would need to be an absolute gem of a Yorker to get him out of LB, because he just gets in the way of it and knocks it for one. He walks right across, clips it for one.
So you think a leg stump Yorker might be worth a go, because no one's tried that, I don't think.
I mean, why not? But it is good that you can. You might get a bit of bat on it, but is it worth it? You know, when you first go in, if you're bowling, like, someone's bowling rocket, like, if Jofra comes in, like, he's one of the best in the world at doing it, like, is there any chance of... There's as good a chance of him doing it as
anyone. So a leg stump Yorker from Archer, maybe, is the...
Why not?
The answer to Steve Smith.
I just don't... Because then also, it's like, well, he might clip it for four, you know.
But in a way, that's worth the risk, isn't it?
Yeah, have you got a feel for it?
Well, at first, if you've got a feel for it, and even if it does go for four, it's something different. I suppose the question I'm asking you as a bowler is, you know, when you're confronted by somebody like Steve Smith, do you either go to your basic plan and just say, well, you know, actually, if you bowl a decent ball and leaves him off the edge, off the pitch, you could get an edge and he'll get out? Or do you try lots of different plans because he's so different?
Sometimes I think if you're going to try a lot of different plans, you could end up fetching leather. All of a sudden, you bowl five overs for 35 or 40, and he's off to a fly because you've tried to get him out and he's given some comfortable balls. It's a tough one. That's why he's so good. That's why he averages 60-odd. Because if you go to, oh, I'm just going to outside, just leave it across 1-1, he's a good player.
But in a way, what's happened, I think, is that players, well, certainly I think England, were almost, they had a plan, but they didn't persevere with that plan.
Yeah.
For long enough, because his method is he's got so much patience and he just outpatiences the bowlers. So maybe the bowlers have got to outpatience him, just keep bowling just outside off and make him eventually make a mistake.
That's the thing. Well, the thing is, obviously, you get good test wickets, so if you do that, the ball just gets knackered, gets softer, and then his eyes in, then it's easier to play shots, and then he's seen the ones he's leaving and he's hitting them for boundaries. So it's He's obviously got a technique that's working. That's why he's one of the best in the world at doing it. I think you've got to attack the stumps early, I think, especially if Joff comes in with pace. Have your feel, attack the stumps.
Well, Plunkett's heading off to America now for a little break to try and get himself fit to play the last few games for Surrey in the Vitality Blast and hope to compete for England's T20 side as well, because, of course, they play some T20 games in New Zealand towards the end of the year. His image was on one of 11 special covers that we at the Cricketer magazine produced to commemorate England's fantastic World Cup victory. So there's one cover for each of the stars from that final, and you can pick up all those and get a subscription to The Cricketer if you go to www.thecricketer.com/celebrate, and there it's the subscription of £20.19 for a year for The Cricketer magazine, and you can get whichever cover you choose as well to commemorate that amazing World Cup triumph. Well, I hope you've enjoyed that edition of the Analyst Inside Cricket. Simon Mann will be back next week from his holidays to assess how England go from here. We'll do another podcast in a week's time looking ahead to the Lord's Test. Lots of thinking to be done for England in the meantime, with Australia cock-a-hoop 1-0 up in the Ashes. Let's hope England can come up with some plans for Steve Smith. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.
Podcast Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.